All right, well, so today we're going to talk about Network Monitor and 3.3. We're just about to release our beta here. So before I even start, how many people have used Network Monitor? Anybody? People in the back half. Well, good. We got some new things to talk about if you've seen this presentation before. And let's see if I'm in the right mode. So first of all, who am I? My name's Paul Long. I'm the technical evangelist from the Network Monitor team. I write a blog, which has a lot of information on how to use Network Monitor and how to do basic troubleshooting. I was previously in CPR, which is our critical resolution group. It's since changed names, but we basically did corporate level support. So I looked at traces all day. That's basically what I did in my job before this. And the other unique thing about me is I built a recording studio in my garage. I like to play with music and record, so a little tidbit about me. So the key takeaways, if you only learn three things out of this presentation, these are probably the key ones. Basically, how to capture, filter, and find data, how to locate protocol information based on traffic you're looking at, so if you want to go reference something in the documentation. And finally, tools for documenting issues. How do you send information to Microsoft about a document or about a trace so you can easily capture the information and put it in email or a document? So a quick history, since it is an older product, and it actually was developed early in the 1990s for Windows for Workgroups. It was a product that, since we just got into networking, we needed something to sniff the traffic. But after a while, it actually went dormant. No one really updated it. The protocols got old. So it kind of stopped after 2.1. Then in 2006, released a new version, a complete rewrite, and we had some specific goals. We had a new vision, new team, a new design. We wanted to kind of create, you know, reinvigorate this product. So we had some specific goals for creating this new protocol analyzer. We wanted to capture network traffic and make it easy to save. We wanted to be able to narrow down the traffic easily, faster troubleshooting and analysis, a simple, safer parser model, which we'll talk about a little bit later. We wanted to crank up the performance, make it a little bit more performant for the faster networks of today, enable automation, easy way to automate captures so you can script them in your batch files, and more accurate parsing. We wanted to create a way to keep the parsers up to date because protocols are often, well, sometimes they change, but also the parsers are often wrong and you have to fix them. So we wanted to create a simple way to keep that up to date. And I highlighted all of these, so... So we're going to do the Red Bus tour. I went to England a couple years ago now, and the Red Bus, you know, you get on the bus and you get off at certain places, and they talk about everything. We're not going to go into all the details of the product, but we'll get off the bus every once in a while, and I'll show you demonstrations of what's going on. So we'll tell you how to capture network and save it, because that's a very important scenario. Narrowing down your traffic, you know, you got a big capture. How do you find stuff in a capture to help you understand what's going on? How to explore a frame. You know, you click on a frame, you see a bunch of data. How do you look into the frame further? Working with fragmented data, this is something that comes up a lot where you'll take a trace, it'll be fragmented, and you won't see all the information in a single packet, and I'll show you how to do that. And then as we move forward into the newer versions, 3.2 and 3.3, we have experts and an API that allows you to access the engine programmatically, which is pretty useful and cool. And finally, we'll talk about the parsers themselves, the mystical, magical parsers that are included in the product. They're open source now, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. So the first thing is capturing traffic and saving. So some of the things that we have, we can capture promiscuous traffic, multi-home traffic, which means if you have two NICs in the box, you get both traffic in the same trace, which is very useful. And we actually now have added auto-scroll. So you see the live trace happen. We now have a button that allows you to kind of scroll as it's coming up so you can see the last data as it occurs. We have NMCAP, which is a command line tool, which is a high-performance tool that allows us to script it in a batch file so you can make it start at a certain time. It's very flexible. So if you have some sort of test suite or something and you want to capture traffic, this is an easy way to automate it. In the UI, we have application tracking, which means that by process, we show you the traffic. So you can click on Internet Explorer and see all the traffic for Internet Explorer. So that's pretty cool. We also have wireless traffic support, which means you can capture management packets. If you have some kind of wireless issue with authentication, there's a lot of traffic that happens behind the scenes that you don't necessarily see. So with specific supported network hardware, which is a lot of stuff, the Intel cards, the a bunch of other ones, you can actually put the card in a specific mode and sniff that traffic and see all the traffic that's in the air. So a pretty cool little feature. And then frames truncation support. This is something we added a while ago, which is pretty important, but you can get a capture and only capture the first 90 bytes if you want to, or whatever you need to cut down your trace data and to make it more performant. So any questions so far? I don't want to whip through this too far without getting feedback. So let's actually show you the interface. This is the capturing demonstration, and I'm just going to show it to you because it's probably easier than actually talking about it. So from the start page, this is usually the page that comes up when you are just starting Network Monitor. You can hit New Capture button. And then you can select your networks. You can actually do it on the start page as well, but you can select as many NICs as you want to capture. And there are other interfaces, such as capturing RAS traffic on NDIS WAN here. You can select those as you need them. You can start your trace. You can actually deselect them as the trace is occurring. So if you need to add in something later, you can. And you'll see that as soon as I started capturing the traffic, it shows up here live. We now have the auto scroll button, which I talked about at the top. So now you can hit that, and you'll see that it updates it live. And it's kind of, maybe we're jumping ahead a little bit, but I can hit in the conversation tree, look at a specific process. I clicked on Mo, which is our mesh software. And now you just see that traffic. So now it's really easy to kind of zero in on that traffic and see what's going on in a live fashion. So that was just basically starting a capture. Then I hit the stop button. I have the capture. And now I can save that information. So there's different ways to save. If you save as, you can save the whole file. But you can also save the selected frames, displayed frames, selected frames, or a frame range. So if you want to narrow down your capture, you can do that at this point. And then finally, once you select a frame, the details of that frame show up here where you can actually dig into them further. All right, so this is the start page we talked about real briefly, but this has some useful information for you if you want to understand the new features. We kind of highlight those there. It's like a little billboard or whatever telling you what's going on in the product, a news page. It's not live updated, but every time we update the product, we tend to update the page with the new features and a bunch of useful links, so you can always go there to find out what's going on. And then we have our recent captures on the right side, so if you want to quickly open up a capture that you used, you know, before, you can do that. And as I mentioned, we also have the select network adapters on the main page too, if you want to just select them there when going in. And this is the capture tab. We already talked about that, so I'm not going to show it again, but it's in your slides for reference. So let's talk about some things to consider when taking a capture, because there are some issues or some potential caveats you might run into. And the first one is the traffic has to arrive at the capturing machine. This means that if you have a smart router or a smart switch, it can actually block that traffic. So you often have to configure your network to support capturing of traffic between two machines when you're a third party. So sometimes you have to mirror a port or use a dumb hub that doesn't do this kind of blocking. And then you can put your machine into promiscuous mode to capture. If you're not in promiscuous mode, you're only going to capture traffic that's directed to your machine. And there's a button, in fact, I'll show you. There's a button at the top that says P mode, and you click that on for the adapters you want to put in promiscuous mode. So the next thing to consider is too much filtering. If you're taking a trace and you're filtering while capturing, you might get into a problem where you filter too much. You actually filter out useful information. So for TCP, I mean for higher level product protocols, TCP is often needed in order to set up some information that's required in order to support the protocol. So it's safe to filter on protocol ports, usually TCP ports. But if you go any higher, if you start filtering on HTTP or something higher, be careful on what you filter. And if you want to be safe, just don't do any filtering and just filter afterwards. There might be some occasions where you have to on a really fast network. You can filter on MAC addresses, IP addresses, TCP ports. That's usually safe. We can also drop frames, and these two I was going to stick together. We now have a drop frame indicator in NetMon, so you can tell if you drop frames. But on a faster network, it is possible for the CPU to not keep up with the amount of frames that are coming in, especially if you're doing filtering, because we have to process the packets, filter them, so in that time, we might get backed up and start dropping frames. Which brings me to the last point. We've added a way to buffer these frames. So what this means to you is when you're taking a capture and you've got a complex filter, the buffer could fill up because we have to buffer the frames before we can filter them, and that might cause frame loss if the pending count keeps on growing over time. So if you've got really fast traffic, we have a little indicator in the status bar and from the command line that shows you the pending count, and if that continues to grow over time, either your filter's too complex, your CPU is too slow, or your network's too fast. It's all kind of a bunch of factors that all factor into this. Any questions? So NMCAP is our command line version of the tool. It's a high performance mode, so if you want to run a capture for a long period of time, this is the tool to use. If you use the GUI to capture for a long period of time, you might get in a situation where we'll run out of memory and we won't be able to save the file. So you want to be careful when you're doing long-term captures. If you're going to run for more than a day, probably more than 6 hours, it depends on how much network traffic, use NMCAP instead. It's also scriptable, very flexible. You can tell it to start at a certain time, stop at another time. You can tell it to stop when it sees traffic in the network trace itself, so when you see a ping or when you see something happening. You have access to all the protocol elements for filtering. The filtering in NMCAP is the same quote strings you would use in the display, in the UI. You can capture live, or you can capture from a file. So if you want to process something in NMCAP, say you want to filter out all port 80 traffic, you could use NMCAP and give it as an input another capture file. So it allows you to do some processing with NMCAP. Again, I talked about the rich stop and start features, and it's automatically in the past. So you run a command prompt, type NMCAP, it's running. You don't have to go add it or find it, in your in program files. So let's show this real quick. So you see, I ran it. It says, okay, well, you didn't give enough parameters. So the first thing to realize is that it's command line. So sometimes they're complex. And if I do question mark, it shows you a ton of parameters that you could pass to it. But I think the best thing to remember is nmcap/examples. And that'll kind of just show you 10 various, or maybe even more now, but different examples that do different things. And that's probably the easiest way to learn how to use it. Any questions on that, nmcap? All right, I talked about this briefly, but this is general saving and loading. Saving of captures, showed you how to save specific frames, how to do different options with saving. But you can also save filters. If you create filters and you want to save them for later, you can save those. Aliases, we haven't talked about it yet, but you can save aliases, which are friendly names for IP addresses and MAC addresses. We can load PCAP files now, and we've even extended this in 3.3. We could load PCAP files, but there are certain media types that we wouldn't honor, so we've actually added that code. So now you might find that a PCAP file that couldn't open before does open, but now it doesn't parse completely because we haven't created a parser for it. So if that's the case, you could send us the capture, and we could look into it and create that parser, or at least file a bug so that we know about it. But we have added some basic parsing in this domain. And then we also have something called a frame buffer manager, which I'm going to show you because it's maybe not all that useful, but it's kind of cool. If you have two captures and you want to combine a frame from one capture and then a frame from the other, perhaps you have a RPC traffic and you're missing the bind in there and you want to take the known bind from another working trace and you want to combine them together. So you can use the frame buffer manager to do that, and that's probably the one application that I've used it for. What you do is you click on the frames that you want to save, and you go to, and this only works in a saved capture, by the way, I believe. Oh, maybe it didn't. Anyways, you do add selected frames to, and you do the frame buffer manager. It opens up a window, and then you can create a new file. So I'll do that, test one. And now this file kind of stays open, and you can add more frames to it. So I could go to another trace, select some frames from there, say view selected, and now you'll see that it comes up with the file name down here, as well as the frame buffer manager. So I could open up a new file, or I could just add to that file. And then now I have four frames in there that I've selected from two different capture files. Now I can save that file by closing it out, by again going to add selected frames to and doing the frame buffer manager, and you see that I have this file open, and now I could close the file. So now I have two frames from two separate files in the same capture file, and I can open that up and look at that information. So it's kind of constructing a capture file from multiple locations. Any questions on that? Just kind of a unique feature we have that not a lot of people know about, and maybe it's not all that useful, but you might find it useful in your day-to-day jobs. All right, so now let's talk about finding the important stuff. You've got a huge trace, and now you want to locate some information. You want to be able to narrow down what you're looking at. So we're going to talk about using the conversation tree, which is a feature that kind of helps you organize the traffic and look at it visually. Filtering is obviously something protocol analyzers have to do, so that's something you want to know how to do. And we have a lot of tools that help you to create filters. Viewing friendly names for networked addresses is the idea that you can alias 1.15.whatever so it says server, and it makes it a lot easier to view the traffic at that level. And then digging into the frame details, looking in there and understanding how to use that to create filters, how to look at the information and the hex format as well. And then finding protocol document references. We now have this new feature in 3.3 that I'm going to show you that, while it doesn't directly jump you to the document, it does help you understand where that documentation is. So let's start. Well, actually, let me go to my next slide, I believe. So let's actually talk about what conversations are, because this is a key feature that we've added to Network Monitor 3 that allows you to group frames logically. So this means that we've defined ways to group frames, and probably the easiest way to understand is an IP conversation. It's just a conversation between two machines, and we define those by the source and destination tuple. So you can understand that conversation from your server to your client is one IP conversation. But they're hierarchical, so TCP conversation is just the source IP and destination IP plus the TCP source port and destination port. So that's just another conversation at the TCP level. So you can imagine that for every port combination, you have a different TCP conversation that you can view. And once I'll go into the UI and show you this to you, but it makes more sense there. And it's not limited to connection-oriented protocols. So if you had a UDP stream and you had some sort of unique identifier in there, you could use that to create a conversation. When I say you can create it, the parsers are the things that define these things, and we've defined a lot of these for you. We also have process information. So traces taken with 3.2 can include process information as long as it's done from the UI. And this means that you'll see all the processes in the conversation tree, and then underneath those processes, the traffic that is coordinated that is from that process. So this gives you, the conversations gives you a way to visually zero in on a frame. And I'll show that in just a second. We used to disable conversations, but that's no longer true. It's enabled by default in the product. The reason we disabled to begin with is because it could eat up memory over time. So if you have a big trace and you want it to open more quickly and you don't require conversations, you could turn it off temporarily. So let's actually go back to Network Monitor, and I'll have a trace here that I've opened up before. And so you see here that on the left side, we have our conversation tree, and at the top level, we have the processes. So you can see I have a bunch of processes that I've captured. We capture the icons, so you can kind of recognize it real simply. And then under each one of these is the next layer, which is IPv4. So now you can see in our conversation tree that we have the definition here, or the IP addresses that are associated in that conversation listed next to it. And then if you click on that in the conversation tree, it filters based on that thing that you've clicked on. So now all the traffic in the frame summary is only based on that IP conversation that I've clicked on. So it gives you a quick way, without having to create a filter, to zero in on that traffic and look at it. And you can do this, you know, at every level that we have traffic. So I can go down to HTTP and only see the HTTP traffic. I don't know why there's a TCP frame in there. That's interesting. So I'm going to talk about a little bit further in there. Are there any questions? So let's talk about some clever tricks, some cool ways to use the conversation tree, because often you know it's there, you just don't really understand what's a simple way to use it. So the first one I already talked about, you can click on a conversation and filter really quickly based on that conversation. You can also go backwards. So if you are in this huge list of frame summary and you want to see what the associated conversation for this guy is, you can right mouse click on it and do find conversation. And you actually have multiple choices here. If you want the Wireshark follow the stream functionality, you can choose TCP. That's kind of the default you use. But you could also go to the IPv4, and if there was other conversations there, they would be listed. So you see that as soon as I click on it, it highlights the node that it found for you. And by doing that, respectively, it filters on the frame summary for you. So now really quickly, by clicking on the frame, you now see all the traffic that is associated with that frame at the level, which is TCP, that you chose when you actually looked at the conversation filter. So that's one way to use it. Another way, now that I've zeroed down into this particular part of the conversation tree, I can see other TCP conversations that also are associated with this IP address. So now I can just arrow down in the conversation tree and see other things, and it really quickly just, you know, I see, okay, this is a TCP conversation. I hit down arrow. Here's another one. Looks like we do a GET, down arrow. Okay, well, here's just a simple single frame that was captured. So kind of gives you a quick way to reference other traffic hierarchically, and you can, you know, go up or down in this case. In this case, it's only HTTP. We only show currently the first HTTP GET in this conversation. You'll see that it says GET albums. Well, that's the first one, but we've actually found that we probably can improve our parsers and show each of these in the conversation tree, so that's something we could extend in the future and make it even more useful. Another quickly thing to understand is that when you apply a filter, it applies the filter and the conversation node you've selected at the same time. It combines these two. And this is important because sometimes you get yourself confused and you'll be clicked on a node in the tree and you'll apply a filter where the union of those two things is, don't intersect. So you might apply a filter, and I don't know if I can do this, but I can say tcp.port equal, just say 1,000. And if there was traffic in the trace I knew, but nothing shows up, it's because I have a filter and this node selected in the tree, and it combined the two together. So you just quickly go to all traffic, and then that will, you know, take the conversation filter off of things. That makes sense? You can also right mouse click a conversation node and add that to your filter. So if you wanted to get all the Explorer traffic, So I'll say copy conversation to clipboard, paste that in. Now I can say all that or all Zoom traffic. Copy that to the filter. And now I've just basically taken the work that the conversation tree and made it back into a filter, and I can apply that to see two nodes from the same conversation tree. Make sense? And then finally, there might be an occasion to sort on the conversation tree. You might think, all right, it would be really cool if I could just see Zune IPv4 traffic in my conversation tree, get the rest out. Well, you can kind of virtually do that by filtering, by clicking on a node in the trace, and then doing a save as. And then you save as the displayed frame. So this basically saves all the data based on what you have displayed, which is just going to be that Zune node. And then when you open it up, you basically have filtered in the conversation tree on that. So it's kind of a two-step process, but it's a workaround if you wanted to narrow down the traffic you see in the conversation tree. Any questions on conversations or the conversation tree in general? No? All right. Next part is filtering in general. So if you use a protocol analyzer, you probably filter all the time. In fact, that's probably what you do 90% of the time. So let's talk about how to create filters, what kind of tools there are to make it easy to create filters. So the first thing is that we have capture filters and display filters, which are, one is for capturing, applying a filter before you even capture it, so you don't get a bunch of data, and the other one is after the fact. They're both the same filters. In fact, all the filtering in our language is the same language. You filter the same way in NMCAP as you do from the UI. It's display filters, capture filters, color filters, they're all the same. So the first tip I'm going to say is you can start with a dot. If you don't know anything about your filtering and you need to create one, we have IntelliSense built into the product. So you can type dot and see all the top-level items and quickly understand that, okay, well, I want a protocol. And then hit dot again, and then it shows you the list of all the protocols. So with IntelliSense, it's an easy way to build a filter without knowing what you're looking for. You're kind of searching for, you know, it's a protocol. I know it begins with a T. I hit T, and now it brings up that one. Well, there's TCP. Well, what do I have available for TCP? I click on that, and further, you know, gives you that information. So IntelliSense is very helpful for that. We have standard filters. So the standard filters are just a bunch of filters we've included in the product to help you learn how to filter and to do some common tasks. And one of the cool things we've done in actually 3.3 is we've kind of organized the standard filters because there are a bunch of them. So now we've actually, and this is a very recent change, so it's not in the beta, we actually organize it by folders. And you can do the same for your personal filters. So now you see that under addresses, a bunch of addressing-related filters. And DNS, there's a bunch of DNS-related filters. So this kind of organizes the standard filters. And then once you select one, and it's actually going to combine the filter with the one I had before, so that's something to keep in mind. It basically just pastes that text into the display filter, whatever dialog you have open, and now you can apply the filter. All right, another important way or another cool tool for filtering is say you have a frame that you know is similar to the other data you want to see, and you just want to make a filter that finds that frames and other frames like it. So remove the filter I have, and let's say I'm looking down here and I see that this frame has a port I'm interested in. I want to find all other traffic that's using the same port. Well, I can right mouse click on it, and you'll see that it says add selected value. And again, it adds it into the current filter, so you could do multiple ones, but I'm going to remove that. And now you see that it added a filter based on what I selected. It said it did the hex value, so it's kind of hard to associate, but it's 49506 is that hex address. So it created a filter based on the frame that I selected. And now that if I apply that filter, it'll find all the other frames that are like this one in that they have the same source port. So that one helps you create filters because if you don't know where to start and you have a frame you're looking at, just right-click and it'll give you an idea of how to create that filter for you. We also have contains filter, and we have two different kinds. We have contains and contains bin. And the difference is that contains is for finding ASCII data in, or ASCII or Unicode data in ASCII or Unicode fields. If the field is partially binary, it doesn't work. You can only only use contains if the field itself is ASCII. So in this case, we're looking for all requests that contain Microsoft in them. And it's case insensitive, searches Unicode and ASCII. But if you want to search binary data, for instance, if you wanted to look for through the whole trace in the frame for your name to see if it's being sent out on the wire, maybe you're going to a web page and you want to see if someone's sending your credit card or something, well, use contain bin, and this is actually a standard filter, so that's the way I'll open it up. So if you go to the standard filters, and there's one called search frame, kind of brings up this a bunch of comments that tell you, teach you how to use it, but in one example it says search all frame data. In this case it's case sensitive and type sensitive, so ASCII, UTF-8, you have to specify. But if I think that's in ASCII and I want to search my phone number, then it'll search the whole frame for that, and if it occurs anywhere in the trace, it'll return those frames for you. So that's a simple way to find something if you don't even know where to start. You just kind of know some text or a number is somewhere in the frame. Any questions on this? Contains bin and contains? And then finally, if you need some help, we have our how do I menu, how do I filter, as well as filter expressions manual. I believe, do we still have this? I think we still have this document in our help. It kind of just has a bunch of simple filtering ideas, and whether or not we've incorporated all this, I don't know, but we have a lot of examples, and that'll help you get started. So it's very important. Filtering is very important to protocol analyzers, and understanding how to do it is one of the basic skills you got to have. All right, so we'll go to this overview of what we just kind of talked about. You can filter on any protocol. So if you want to just find MSRPC traffic, type in MSRPC and enter that. That returns all the frames that match that filter. It's just looking for the existence of that field in the frame. TCP.port equal 80, well, that's a pretty common one you might want to do, so you might memorize that. You can also filter on process names. If you captured the process data, you can look for process name equal explorer. This is a property that we have in our language or in our that we define for our parsers. Talked about capture filters and display filters. We also have color filters, which are pretty cool. And we don't really define any beforehand. It's blank slate. But if you go to filter, color filters, you can see that I have a couple here defined. You can use colors. In fact, let's create a new one. So I'll add. And I want to make all HTTP traffic something. So I'll make it purple. And I can underline it and make it italics. And again, the filtering here is the same as the filtering in display filters, capture filters. It's all the same. So now that once I've added this, you'll see that this response here, and of course I'm highlighting it, can't see it, but now it's purple and underlined and italicized. So color filters are a pretty powerful way if you want to set up things to pop out at you. And if you look on the blog, there's some examples there of how to create one to find error messages. If you just want to make a generic error message for HTTP, for SMB, turn red, then there's a color filter that we could do for that. And you could always take one of the standard filters and, you know, create a color filter out of it. Talked about the standard filters, 40+. There's a bunch of different ones in there to help you understand how to write them and to do simple things. And you can write your own filters. You can save them. You can keep track. You can keep them in folders now, so you can arrange them in folders like we do our standard filters. The last thing I want to talk about is the find. Say you really don't want to apply a filter. You just want to find the next frame that has this value in it. Well, we have find, control F. And again, same kind of filtering that you do everywhere else is here. So if I wanted to find the next HTTP traffic, or next HTTP frame, you'll see that it jumped to it. and I can keep them going forward and reverse, so it works like a regular fine, kind of a simple way to go to the next trap without having to filter and then undo your filter. And that's about it on filtering. Well, no, that's not true. These are just clever tricks with filter. We kind of talked about a bunch of these, but the dot IntelliSense, remember that when creating filters? Color filters are trippy, a cool way to make the data stand out. Again, display filter, capture filter, color filter, NMCAP, they're all the same filters. You don't have to learn a different language. It's all the same. Binding frames by adding, right-click, add the filter. It works with columns, too, which is something I didn't show you. So this is kind of cool. Say that you know in the description itself, this description column, I want to find another description that has some text in it somewhere. Well, you can actually right-click on that frame and say, add description to filter, and you'll see that it says description equal that exact line. Well, in this case, I just want to find descriptions that have the word, I don't know, S&B in it, let's say. So it actually searches on this column, and there's no S&B traffic in here, for this traffic. So that's kind of it's very generalized for any of the columns. You can do any sort of searching and filtering on those as well. And then we talked about searching the whole frame with contained bin, which is a very generalized but very powerful way to filter. Aliases. Aliases are the idea that you can make your traffic more readable by aliasing names. So what I did is I changed the IP address to say client and another IP address to say server, so it's a little bit more readable. I don't have to memorize all the names. And probably one of the first things you might do when you're looking at a new trace is go ahead and label everything. So we've actually made this a lot easier in 3.3 because you can now right mouse click on the address. So I can right mouse click destination and say create alias for destination, and it automatically fills in all the information for you. This used to be a manual process before. So now I see 255 and say, oh, well, that's a broadcast, so I'll just label it as that. And then you have to apply it. That's the one thing. You have to hit the apply button. And once you do, it'll change the destination wherever it finds it to that address. So it's a simple way to kind of name these things as you go along, as you discover what they do, and then they'll be set. And then you can save them as a file that you can bring up again when you open the capture file. Or you can save them as your default if you're in a test environment and you've got 6 or 7 machines that are all the name the same. Set as your default so that when network monitor comes up, it uses the same alias file each time. Any questions? All right, exploring a frame. So you've got a frame. What's inside of it? What do you find, or what can you look at inside the frame? What can you do with that information? So here you can see that I've clicked on an MBT frame. And as soon as I do click on any frame, you'll see that, actually, let me resize things here a bit. So when I click on this frame, we populate the frame details and the hex details. So you see them both based on what frame you select. And of course, you can break into these further and look at specific data. So when you click on a field in frame details, it highlights the same field on the right side. Now, one thing that is actually confusing the users, due to the color scheme of Vista and above, they make this gray. It's, you know, it's basically the color of the unselected data is very light and hard to see. So I've actually made it's the color button face color in the operating system. I make it a little darker to show up. This is true of any app. Outlook has the same problem. It's kind of, they made it too light, I believe, for a lot of the displays these days. So once you select something in frame details, it highlights it over here. But if you want to go backwards, what if you're just looking in frame details and you see some value, and you're like, well, what is that? So you can double-click in frame details, and it'll highlight the same thing in the frame details, so you can actually see what it is. So if you see like an error code or something in here, and you want to go backwards, you can just double-click in the hex details. We've also recently added different column layout, so you can have, you know, specific sizes rather than the auto, which is the default. We have the information, the offset, and if I expand this, the screen's probably a little too small, but you can see that how many bytes are selected, the offset, and the protocol offset, so you kind of have that information available to you. So you can also, if there's some data in here that's not parsed properly, just say you have a frame that's on a different port, or it's on, there's not a parser for it perhaps, or maybe it's just not parsing properly. Well, you can highlight the data in the hex details, and you can decode as. When you bring up decode as, it actually shows you every data structure in our parsing space, in our parser space. And you could try to parse it as a protocol. So if I thought it was TCP, or maybe I think it's an ARP, you can try to parse it as that. And then it'll open up a new window that it attempted to parse as. So this is kind of a cool way to take data and force it to parse as something else. Now, people ask sometimes, well, what if I want to parse a whole stream of data as something else? Well, we don't have that functionality right now, but you could modify the parsers fairly simply. If, for instance, it was on the wrong port, it's very simple to modify the parser to say use port 90 instead of 80 for HTTP traffic. Though with HTTP, we actually detect that traffic, so you usually don't have that problem anymore. So the next important thing is reassembly. When you take a trace, transport layers will often break up those frames, right? Fragment them, and it could happen at many of the different layers. When we load up a trace, we don't automatically put these things together. They're in this format that they appeared on the wire. So if you do have a trace that needs to be reassembled, we have a reassemble button, which is only available if you have a saved trace. So if you've just done a capture and you attempt to reassemble, that option won't be available to you, and that's just the way we kind of handle our files. So you have to save it out and open it again, and then you hit the reassembly button. So I'm going to do that on this trace. Once you hit the reassembly button, it'll open up a new window which contains all the previous data plus new frames that have been inserted for the reassembled data. So for the first-time user, this is a little bit confusing because they look and they say, I'd have to go look for, in fact, I could probably find it. They would look at this HTTP traffic and say, well, all the same data is there. I don't understand what happened. Did anything happen? Well, we actually insert frames. And what I do to make this more obvious is I create a color filter that underlines these inserted frames. And the way I did that is that these inserted frames have a special header on them called payload header. So I created this color filter to make these easy to identify. And then I can see that this one right here has been underlined for me. So I know this is one of the new inserted frames that they've added in. So there must have been some frames before. In fact, I could probably guess and say, okay, this is a response, a bunch of continuations. And then here's that same response again. So that one's been inserted. And then if you explore that frame and the frame details, you'll see that we've replaced all the TCP junk and all the previous information with something called payload header. And then we put the whole packet together here. So now if you look at the body, and this is not a very nice one, but if it was a big HTTP file, you'd see all the file here. The whole thing would be put back together and appear in that frame. So you could almost visualize it, you know, it's not really a text editor, but, you know, it looks like all text kind of readable at that point. So that's pretty cool. So you got to remember reassembly. If you're looking at a trace and it doesn't look like things put that together, or it's not, you see an incomplete frame, it's very possible because it needs to be reassembled. So you have to reassemble it, find the new reassembled frames, and I use this color filter, and then look at those reassembled frames. So the next thing, any questions on that reassembly? No? So let's talk about frame commenting. This is something new to 3.3, and this goes to the idea that I talked about, one of the main points in the beginning of the talk, about how you can distribute information or comment information about a trace. Let's say you have a trace and you want to say something significant about this frame that I just found. Actually, let's not do the reassembled frame. So I can now click on a frame. I'm looking for something interesting. So I see an auth frame, let's say. We now have the frame comments tab. So you can now comment each frame individually and say something significant about that frame. So let's say I wanted to comment this and say, in that auth frame and say, look at this problem. So now I can comment the frame, and what I can do, this window stays open, so it's kind of cool. I can go back here and say I wanted to collect information so I could highlight what's going on. So we have another feature here that if I right mouse click in this frame and copy the tree, it copies a text version of that tree. So this goes back again to the idea of documenting your cases. I can copy the frame and then I can highlight what's going on in here. And what's really cool is that this is a, what's it called? This allows you to do RTF formatting. So unfortunately, it doesn't have any RTF formatting tools in the thing itself, but if I go to here and I colorize something, and then I don't know, something in bold, I can now copy this data back in here and it sticks. So it allows you to do some cool formatting if you wanted to say, this is the problem frame and this looks wrong and this looks wrong. Now I can do that. I can save this comment. And then you'll notice that as soon as I save it, the frame itself has this little number sign to let you know that there's a comment available for that frame. And if I were to save this trace, which you have to now save it as a new file, so I say commented. If you open this trace, we have an icon on the bottom that tells you also that somewhere in this trace is a frame. And right here, see this little folder opens up to kind of to tell you that, hey, there's a comment somewhere in this trace. So now, like, well, how do I find the comments? Well, actually, I'm trying to, did we add this in yet? Yes. So now we have a standard filter built in to say, well, are there any frames with comment titles? We can apply it. Now we can find them quickly. So if you just kind of wanted to look at what frames have been commented, you can go through, and now you can click on it, and you'll see that it, again, populates this window down here with the frame comment, with all our formatting, et cetera. So it's kind of a cool way to comment your frame. So if you're going to send a case to us to look at, or if you have a customer that wants to send you information, they could use this to comment the trace and give it to you, and you can have that information all stored as a file. It's the same file. It's not an extra file at all. Any questions on that? So I talked real quick that you can right-mouse click here and copy the data. Well, you can do the same thing in the frame summary. So we get a lot of people that pass in screenshots of our UI, and I'm like, well, I can't even scroll down or nothing. Well, it's actually better, I think. Say I wanted to pass like these 7 or 8 frames. Well, if you copy them, that's what it does. It copies them as text. So it's just a bunch of text representation, a lot easier to deal with. And it's actually tab separated. So if you go into Word or in like Outlook, for instance, you can format that as a table, and it'll put it in a table format. And now you can delete the columns you don't want, and it looks really nice. So it's a much easier way than taking a screenshot, or at least, well, maybe not easier, but a better way to view it on the other end, especially if you want to give a lot of data that they need to scroll through. And another thing real quick while we're here is you can customize your columns, by the way. So if you have other columns you want to add in, we have a huge list. And basically any property in our MPL, and a property is just something we define as like a variable in our language, all these properties will show up as a desired column. So if you wanted to get the original IP address, for instance, in this case, this is resolved for you, the LT SWID, but maybe you want to see the IP address all the time. You could actually add the column in for IP address, and I think, oops. So then we have IPv4. Actually, it's called something different. So now I'm going to show you another, let's see. I'll come back to that in a sec because I think back in my presentation, I'm going to talk about this in a sec anyway. we talked about, this is a demonstration on reassembly. We talked about this already, so I'm not going to go to it again. Well, actually, we didn't talk about it. I thought I did. So I'm going to go back to the presentation and show this. So one of the things we wanted to talk about is that if you're looking at a trace and you want to find out something about the documentation behind a packet, so you're looking at, let's just say, DHCP, and you're like, well, what is the documentation for DHCP? How do I find out how this protocol works? You know, what's the definition for it? Well, we don't have a way to jump to the documentation, but what we do have is a way to jump to the parser code. So by right mouse clicking, and I go back and show you. By right mouse clicking on the field and frame details, you can go to data field definition or data type definition. And this jumps to the source code where this is defined. Now, why this is important is because at the top of all our parser files, we tell you what documentation we use to write them with. So it jumped to the definition of the protocol DHCP. What I really care about is to go to the top of it, and then you'll see all the RFC references and any MS documentation that's used. So if you wanted to find out what our extensions were for DHCP, you can now go look up MS-DHCP on MSDN and get to the documentation real quickly. So simply by just clicking on the parser, clicking on the frame and network monitor, right mouse clicking and going to definition, will get you to the file, that the parser file, the MPL file, and then go to the top to find out the associated documentation. Does that make sense? All right, so we're going to change gears a little bit and talk about experts. And the idea here is that we have a cool capturing engine, we have a cool parsing engine, but there's no flexible ways to use that information. So we've created an API. An API is basically just that, access to our parsing engine and our capturing engine. Everything's included with Network Monitor 3. You just install it. You have the libraries, the H file, DLL, everything you need to create the application. We don't give you the IDE, but you can use Visual Studio for that or whatever. And then you can do some cool things with the API. You can read and write capture files. So if you had a capture file that you wanted to break open, you can read it and get the raw information if that's all you really wanted to do with it. Or you could take the frames and put them in another file, copy them from one place to another. You can capture live data. So you could do the same thing that our UI does and capture on multiple NICs and create a callback and receive that frame data and capture it and process it or save it to a file. You can filter live or capture data, again using the same filters we do in the UI. So if you wanted an API, a program to filter on HTTP, well, that's the filter you pass in, HTTP. You can inspect all the data fields. So you can say you want to get the TCP source port from a capture file. Well, you can look and return that data. In fact, any data that we have a parser for. And now we've added some new things for 3.3. We've extended the API because these were all things that were in 3.2. We now have the ability to read properties and comments. So these comments you can add, you can programmatically get them out of the trace again. And you can also access all these properties. The properties are really useful because the one instance I can think of is TCP payload length. There's no field that tells you what the length is. You've got to take the length of the IP header and the TCP header, and you got to subtract something. Well, we have a property that does this for you already, so you could just call that property and not have to do the math yourself. You can also get display descriptions. So this is really cool. If you wanted to build some kind of application that showed you the display strings that occurred in the UI, you can do that as well. And then finally, you can now access conversation information. So if you wanted to read a trace and group it by TCP conversation, you can now use the API to do this. So you can write experts. I'll come back to this. But another thing is, how do you access an expert? How do you run an expert on a trace? Well, we've included this in 3.3 as well. We've extended the UI so that we now have a menu called experts. And there's two things to notice. The first is a bunch of experts that I've loaded already. And then the last one is download experts. So the download experts takes you to an external page, which will keep up to date with all the available experts. So right now, externally, we have one, simple search. This might give me an opportunity. This is our program manager back here, Michael Hawker, and he actually wrote the simple search tool. He's on the Netmon team as well. So we'll list experts as we get them, as we publish them, and as other people publish them. If there's somebody in the open source world that has a cool expert that plays back a video or something, we can post those experts here, and then they make them discoverable via our UI, so it's really easy for a user to understand what experts are available. So let's look at a specific expert, at least one, maybe two. So in this case, this is probably the reason. This is the expert everyone asks about, is top users. They want to see the top talkers in a trace, in this case by endpoint, meaning that, you know, how much traffic did this specific IP address send out. By conversation means how much traffic occurred between two IP addresses. So I launched the expert. I right-mouse-clicked the frame, or you could access it from the experts menu. There is some context information that can be passed through, so sometimes you want to click on a specific frame. And then it opens up a new window, and this is the expert I wrote that sorts the traffic by the top talkers. So now you can kind of look and say, well, this guy up here, he seems to be talking a lot. Maybe he's doing something bad. Maybe he's flooding the traffic. Maybe he's got a virus. I don't know. So another little thing I added in here is you can copy it as a filter. So you can kind of easily go back and look at that traffic in your trace itself. And so now I can take that filter and kind of go back and forth a little bit easier. And I've also done some cool things, like I created a little pie chart so you can kind of visualize the information and say, well, it's taking up, looks like 50% of the traffic. So some kind of cool functionality there. So that's one simple expert. Another one I didn't want to close, I'll show you real quick, is something called HTTP Extract, which allows you to take an HTTP frame and pull out the information and see what it looked like on its normal, whatever application created it. So for instance, and hopefully I can do this. So I see here that there's a GET request for some kind of GIF file. I don't know what it is. So I can right mouse click on it. Hopefully this will work. I had looked at this before. Okay. And now you can see that that's the icon that was in the trace. It's, you know, some GIF. So you can go ahead and just pull out these things, text files, CSS files. It kind of gives you a simple way to pull out that data. So now you can kind of visualize it with these experts that, well, hell, I could probably do that for video traffic, or, you know, I could do it for a conversation, so I could test the quality of the call. So the world of experts is something that opens up our engine and our parsers to a wider world of domain-specific problems, because really, network monitor is a very generalized tool. Any questions on experts in the API? No? Yes? So the question is with the API, can you change properties? Specifically, can you add comments? So the answer is no. That's something we've kind of added the commenting after we added the API extension. So we kind of thought, well, you can access the comments, but you can't add them. But that doesn't mean you can't do it. The capture file is, we document it in our help file, and we document how the comments add. So you could actually add them in manually. And internally, there's actually a group that's done this already that's extended. We have an internal wrapper that we use for our test suites. And they've done this already. They've extended it to add comments. So it's possible that we could figure out how to externalize that as well. But it is possible. It's just not supported by the API. And currently, we have no way to access. You asked about properties as well. And we don't have any way to modify the properties. You can only read the properties. That answer your question? Yes? Oh, yeah, right, yeah. Filter what? That has the comments on it? Yeah, so the question is can you filter on only the frames that have comments? And yes, so we have this standard filter built in. And what it does is it just says anything that has that the comment title is not blank, show it. So that'll filter and only show those comments. All right? Yeah, frame commenting is awesome, especially, I mean, there's just so much information that you want to pass along. Now you can put it all in the same trace. It's really cool. So let's talk about the parsers quickly. So our parsers themselves are just script-like code that we've included with the product. It's open source, so that means it's available on CodePlex. We update this monthly, and you can download the latest parser versions every month. You can write your own parsers. You can correct the ones that are there or modify them if they don't show information like you want them to. So there's some folks out there that have their own proprietary protocols, and they've written their own parsers. They use network monitors, so that's pretty powerful for that. It's a very concise language specific for networking, so I don't want to say quirky, but you know, there's different ways of doing things. All the source code's shipped in the product. And there's some cool things I just mentioned, like changing summary lines. If a summary line isn't the way you want it, you can change it. You can create properties. If there's some complex filter you want to create that's based on some information in the trace, you could actually create a property in the MPL and filter on that instead. It also specifies how data is reassembled. This is all part of the protocol, so if there's a protocol out there that needs to be reassembled and is not, you can add the code, or we could add the code. And it also defines what a conversation is. So there might be some cases where you want to further refine what a conversation is or add a conversation for a protocol so that you can have it show up in the conversation tree and you can do further parsing in the UI. And as I said, the latest parsers on CodePlex, www.codeplex.com. And I have links at the end, the last slide in the trace. But that's where you can get them. We'll update them monthly, and you'll have the latest parsers. Any questions on the MPL or the parsing language? And this is the tab. We have a little IDE built in that does colorization and IntelliSense. It's maybe not the best editor to use, but if you want to, you know, change something quickly, we have an explore object view tree that you can use to find it by protocol or by the file. So it helps you explore and locate the actual code for a parser fairly simply. It's all built in. You can make a change, save it, rebuild the parsers, and then see what happens. So it's very, very quick to make, you know, simple changes. And then finally, here's some links, you know, in your slide deck, but put them up here as the last slide. Talked about our blogs. Connect Microsoft's where we do our betas. We have our 3.3 beta out there, so if you want to join on Connect, you can be a 3.3 user and get the latest versions. And we are about to release, at least we've got to be pretty close, so we hope in the next couple of weeks we should have 3.3 out the door. And that's it. Any questions? Yes. So the question is do we have thoughts about how to deal with encrypted protocols? And we actually have two thoughts on this, and we're always looking for feedback on what the best way to do this is. But we're definitely thinking about this for the next version. It's come up a ton of times, and there's two ideas we have. You have the case where you can take the trace and insert yourself somewhere in the stack so that it's taken before and after it's encrypted. So you get the data before and after it's encrypted. So we know how to do this. But the problem is that this doesn't always solve all the scenarios. For instance, if you're a third-party machine and there's traffic going by, well, you might not have the opportunity to be on the machine that's doing the encryption, right? You might be wanting to troubleshoot something and you kind of don't know where it's going to occur. So this doesn't solve that problem. The other way to solve it is to get the private key and provide the same unencryption of the data with our engine. The problem with that is that not everyone wants to give up their private key. So it's, you know, there's two worlds there, and we're trying to figure out what the best scenario is. Maybe we have to support both. I'll probably actually ask this question of you because it is something we want to investigate. But those are the two thoughts we have as far as trying to solve that problem. And right now, we understand SSL, that's a big one. ESP, maybe not as big. There might be other ones. Well, yes, yes, yes. I mean, those two seem to be big. RPC is another one that does encrypt and write. So it's something we got to think about for sure in the future, and it's something we want to tackle here. Yeah, it's crucial. And that's one of the advantages of capturing other places in the stack. If we make that available, then it doesn't really matter what the encryption is. We just got to capture it at the right point to get it before it's encrypted, at least for ESP and SSL. Yes, though for Vista and above, they've actually developed the stack in such a way that you can insert yourself anywhere, well, in a lot of different places, 56 different places, I think. So it's actually built into the OS somewhat. So we're thinking we can leverage that. We could also, there's other ways to solve that problem. But yeah, there has to be some sort of support from the OS, or we'll have to do something funny at the lower layers driver. Well, right. Hopefully not. Right. Let the world know. any other questions? No? All right. Well, that's it. I hope you enjoy.